be free from compelled pregnancy to the growing movement to dismantle family policing, led by parents and youth who have been ensnared in it. These activists promote legislation to end mandated reporting, to guarantee legal representation for parents, and to require informed consent for drug testing of pregnant people and their newborns. They advocate for policies that shift government funds away from coercive interventions in families toward putting resources directly in family caregivers' hands. And they are creating community-based approaches to support families and keep children safe.
Professor Dorothy E. Roberts holds appointments in both law and sociology at the University of Pennsylvania, and she is founding director of the Penn Program on Race, Science, and Society in the Center for Africana Studies. This WINGS program was excerpted from the 8th Annual Francis Sissy Farenthold Endowed Lecture in Peace, Justice, and Human Rights. For a link to view video of the entire event, email wings@wings.org. WINGS thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Karen Engel, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose books include The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The WINGS sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Now I'm tired of segregation, free, and now free, 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 I want free, my equal free, rights. Free, well, free, respect free, and education, free, free, well, free, not total free, integration. Free, now that's why I'm fighting for my rights.
I am Don Jacobson, one of the hosts of Moving On Friday, from noon to 1:30. This Friday, I'm presenting music of the Civil Rights Movement and related music. From the Montgomery High School Trio to Rhiannon Giddens, we'll hear music that supported and inspired social movement. At a time when the federal government is hacking away at diversity, at KBOO, we are embracing it. Tune in Friday, noon to 1:30, only on KBOO.
Like a tree planted by the world.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from McMenamins, presenting Heated Rivalry, a jockstar rave with DJs Gregory Dillon and Michael Medrano at the Crystal Ballroom on Friday, April 3rd. Tickets and info at crystalballroompdx.com.
Quiet as often as I could have.
Good morning, everyone, you Portland Pollies. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you are listening to Radical Romance, the show for, of, and about, by people in non-traditional relationships, meaning ethically non-monogamous relationships, people who have more than one romantic slash sexual partner, if you choose to combine those things. So today, well, I typically start out with one of the ethicist columns out of the New York Times. I feel these columns just generally stimulate thought in you guys, the listeners, the callers. So the first one here I'm going to start with is from a woman who writes in, "A woman I grew up with has a husband who has been twice inappropriate with me in public places. Once at a bar, he suddenly leaned over and stuck his tongue in my ear. I was too stunned to respond. I tried to pretend it didn't happen, and I walked away from him. Another time at a party I was throwing, he moved in to kiss me out of the blue. He was angling his head, coming in for a kiss on the cheek, but then it was clear he was trying to give me a kiss on the lips. I turned my face to the side at the last second, and he wound up kissing me on the cheek and said, 'Both incidents occurred in a room full of people, his wife included, but she was not within viewing distance either time. I hardly ever see this couple, and I didn't know the husband at all. there's no mutual friends of ours I could run to, or I could run this by. What, if anything, should I do? And the ethicist responds with, what you describe is deeply inappropriate and concerning. You shouldn't have to tolerate this kind of behavior, and it's understandable that you're wondering what to do. Because you hardly ever see this couple, one option is to simply avoid the couple whenever you run into them in any social situation. But you might consider sending the husband a message saying that his behavior has been unacceptable and must never happen again. I imagine he'll deny it, bluster, claim he was drunk, it was a joke, all sorts of excuses. He'll say you misunderstood, but know that he will understand you. So another option is to tell the wife. If she's unaware, she may appreciate it, knowing that there's also a risk here that she will react offensively or dismissively. Of course, she may already know and be struggling with his actions. You could frame it as a concern rather than an accusation. They may avoid you in the future, and that might be a good outcome. Whatever you decide, the burden of correcting his behavior doesn't fall on you. His actions are his responsibility. I like this one. Even though it's about a heterosexual couple, they're all heterosexuals. I remember even as a younger gay man, when guys, typically older than myself, I was in my 20s into my early 30s, in bars and public places, would come on to me publicly, and I wasn't really feeling it or appreciating it. I remember one time, I have a fondness for leather bars. They seem to be much friendlier than your generic gay bar. And so anyway, in L.A., we had the Fault Line in Hollywood. We had the Rawhide in the Valley. We had a few. Here in Portland, we have the Eagle in North Portland. So they tend to be very friendly places. Friendly in a not just friendly way as in friendship, but touchy-feely kind of places. So I do remember I was wearing a pair of jeans, and under my jeans I had on only a jock strap. You know, gay men, we want to display the goods if we can. So I was dressed no different than any other gay man in the bar. I think I had on one of those T-shirts. They're referred to as wife beaters, you know, the athletic undershirt. And a pair of jeans. So this guy that I didn't know was there, he was way older than myself at the time. He was probably in his late 40s, early 50s, which of course to me at that point was ancient. I'm well beyond that age now. So I'm practically one of the walking dead at this point. But anyway, as far as walking into a bar goes, I'm kind of invisible at this point. I've got gray hair and I walk with a cane frequently. So these kinds of things rarely happen to me at this point in life. But anyway, I was a young man in a bar, and this older man who had a partner with him, younger than myself, clearly, probably early 20s. The older guy was probably between 25 and 30 years older than his partner. And he leans in to talk to me, and he doesn't do what this character did in the ethicist column, which he didn't do anything like stick his tongue in my ear. He placed, I'm supposed to be like Dr. Ruth here and speak clinically, so a handful of buttock. But anyway, I quickly excused myself to go to the restroom, thinking I was escaping this character. And again, this is at least 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago at this point. I was still young and pretty, so not that I'm so bad now, or as Cher says, when people tell her she looks good for her age, she always says, well, what am I now, chopped liver? So anyway, that's how I'm feeling. So this was years and years ago. I go into the restroom to escape this character, and he follows me in. And all of a sudden, he's Mr. Handsy. His hands are all over. And his younger partner comes in and sort of moves past the rest of us and goes and takes care of his business while he's manhandling me. And it was just so uncomfortable for me. I liked the woman in this story. I just did not know how to respond. Clearly, it didn't bother either one of them that this older man was fondling me and giving me his attention. So that's the story. And as the ethicist says, it's not my responsibility or the one in the less powerful position. It's really the one in the power spot, which these guys seem to perceive themselves as being in the power spot, that they can do whatever they like. It's rather exploitive in many ways. So today I have no guest interview. You listeners are my co-hosts and my interviewees. Give me a call if you have the time and interest, of course, 503-231-8187. This show is all about ethical non-monogamy. Speaking of which, since I last spoke with you all, which was slightly before Valentine's Day, well, Valentine's Day has come and gone, and it was lovely. I had a wonderful Valentine's Day with my main squeeze, Stuart. So anyway, an article that everyone has sent to me via text or email since that show that came out on Valentine's Day of all days was about how ethical non-monogamy or polyamory has taken over Brazil. And it seems to be moving in a large, large percentage of folks towards non-monogamy. And Brazil is largely a Catholic country, so Catholic countries tend to be somewhat conservative. And even the Pope has come out and made a statement about this. The Pope, of course, is an American guy. He's maybe 5 years older than I am, but he and I were both doing our undergrad in Philly at the same time. I was at Temple, the state school, and he was at Villanova, the Catholic school. So anyway, I'm talking about non-monogamy in Brazil at the moment. And more people are identifying in that country as either bi or pansexual. I find here in Portland, those folks who either consider themselves bi or pansexual seem to embrace that large umbrella of queer. So queer covers a lot of territory. I've had more people tell me they're queer who, I'm like, you're gay? And they say, no, I'm not gay, I'm queer. I'm like, well, what's the difference? So anyway, gay is same sex, homosexual interactions. Queer is any of these, anything from pansexual to bisexual, any of these non-traditional sexual relationships, romantic relationships, not necessarily identified with sex specifically. And that's made very clear in this Brazilian article in the New York Times. One of the things that came out in the article is that it's very, very popular to have large, large pool parties in Brazil for the poly set, polyamorous folks. So especially right outside of Rio de Janeiro, lots of these events occur. And again, a lot of them are filled with bisexual and pansexual folks. The theory behind why this is happening in the article, it suggested that women are fed up with their cheating husbands in Brazil. And largely across the world, apparently women sort of turn the other cheek on their philandering husbands, if it's even philandering. It's considered somewhat normal in Africa and many Middle Eastern countries. The French also for years have sort of, French women apparently have turned the eye in the other direction. So I'm reading all of my notes here about Brazil. But anyway, yeah, it's a popular thing, and it started about 10 years ago. Apparently, when a notary notarized a common law marriage between three people, that was the start of it. And more notaries, despite the fact that it's illegal for a notary in Brazil to authorize or notarize these unions of more than two people. I remember we had to be notarized when domestic partnerships came around in California when I was a resident there. And I went to the notary with my then partner, and we registered as domestic partners. And apparently, since same sex has become legal even in this country, people cannot just register as domestic partners, any two people, and particularly same gender folks, they have to get married, which is kind of interesting. Curious about your thoughts on that one. 503-231-8187. Please give me a call and let me know your thoughts on ethical non-monogamy, on domestic partnerships, on same-sex marriage. Would love to hear your thoughts about it, folks. I think you all knew my story last year. And most of 25, I was in a polyamorous relationship with two partners, and that sort of crashed and burned towards the end of the year. And now I'm with one of them, who's a super great guy, and I'll only speak for myself. I'm happy and in love in this particular relationship. And the feelings seem to be somewhat reciprocal. When we hung up the phone last night, he said, I love you, which was nice to hear, always nice to hear. So don't you guys all love it when someone tell you, I love you, as you get to get off the phone with them? Let me know your thoughts, 503-231-8187. Also, let me know, like these Brazilian folks, do you believe that these polyamorous relationships must include sex, or can they not necessarily be sexual? I can tell you, when I was married to my now ex-husband, I divorced because I had a stroke and did not want to come home to the same situation, which was a quasi-polyamorous one. So we had two children at home. And yes, the Brazilians do the same thing. They're raising their kids with their polyamorous partners. And there's a TV show here in the States where they have some children who they're not sure who the father is. I think it's called Poly Family. I can't tell you what network it's on, but yeah, it's called Poly Family. And each of the wheels... Oh, okay, I'm stopping because Matthew's on the line. Matthew, go ahead.
Hi there, Doctor. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Oh, we've spoken before, Matthew?
Yes, it's been a couple of months, but we spoke a little while ago. I'm in a polyamorous relationship in a throuple with my primary partner and his partner, who is also his full-time caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We are doing fairly well, but are juggling with sort of these questions right now as it stands. Myself and my partner are going to be having our first child in the next couple of months. And so we've been talking about how to get our third on as a caretaker, on as a legal guardian, and the sort of legal loopholes and workarounds you have to do, the paperwork you have to do in order to be, recognized by the state as a caretaker and a parent, and just how difficult and bureaucratic the whole process is.
Right. Matthew, are you talking about seeing if you can add him on as a parent legally, do some sort of adoption?
The way we're currently doing it, when the child is born, is to, we would have to go through a court, but be able to get him on as a legal guardian, I think is the technical term, rather than adoption as a parent.
Right, right. I get it. I'm curious. So, I may be putting the cart before the horse, but if this all worked in your favor, what would the child refer to as the legal guardian as?
Oh, father, a dad, absolutely. We would all be, for all intents and purposes, dads, parents in her life. But for legal purposes, I would be the myself and my primary partner would be the legal parents.
Is your primary partner a woman?
A transgender man, but he is giving birth to our child and will therefore, be on paperwork as a mother, but that's a whole other discussion.
Right, right. Will you be on paper as the legal father?
Correct. And she will be taking my last name.
Right.
Largely for tax purposes as well as other benefits for her end. So
she meaning the child.
Correct, yes.
And are you married to your primary partner?
Not at current. That's a whole other discussion. We at the current moment, our current plan is also for myself and my primary partner to get legally married sometime probably next year. My primary partner and our third is also going to have a ceremony, but it's going to be a lot more spiritual, a lot more ceremonial than anything legally binding.
Right, like a commitment ceremony of sorts.
Exactly. But we all are in it for the long haul. We're having a kid together. I couldn't do this without both of them. None of us could.
In most states, if the couple is married and the husband, so to speak, gets a legal designation called the presumptive father. So the male who is married to, anyway, we're getting into biology and all of that, and I can't speak to all of that very much, but yeah, you probably know more about it than I do at this point, but yeah, if you were married, you might be the presumptive father, but as is, will you be on the birth certificate?
Correct. Yes, I will.
Okay, and the third person can be a designated, say it again?
A legal guardian.
Legal guardian, right. So there'll be a legal guardian and two parents on the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm. And, we're only doing this more or less because we have to for state help and other benefits, things that will become more necessary as we go forward. But large scale, we don't need the state to recognize our living situation, really.
Right.
It really just comes down to making sure she has all the options and opportunities possible for the child.
Right, right.
So, regardless, it's been better. We're looking really far forward, and we're really excited. It's just going to be grow up a little different. And there's a very good book. There's a very good book that my parents recommended to me on living in a polyamorous family, but the name escapes me. I'll have to find that again and bring it back up next time we talk.
Please do. I'd love to hear the title of the book.
Sounds good. Thank you very much for your time, Professor. I hope you have a good day.
You're welcome, Matthew. Nice to talk to you again. Take care. I'll just speak since we don't have anyone else waiting for a call. I'm going to speak and just say that in Brazil, there were a lot of families featured in this article, which included moms and dads and kids, not necessarily legal binding, but they use the same term that we do here, which is chosen family. So they are romantic partners, intimate partners, and they have children together. And it's sort of a group setting, like a polyamorous relationship. There used to be a show on cable called Big Love. I think they may have been Mormon in that particular show. Anyway, there were kids, there were parents, and my own situation when I was married to my now ex-husband, we had two adoptive children together. So we were the legal parents on the birth certificate. Our kids' birth certificates just list parent one and parent two, which is each of us, and which were two already long last names, but now they're combined. And one of the kids now sort of just goes by the first one because of default, and how he keeps getting pegged as just having the first part of the two-part last name. So he just gets... And ironically, my last name starts with a Z, so their last name now starts with a Z either way. So they're always last on the list. I remember that as a kid. I was always seated in the last seat at the back of the room until one year, maybe that was fourth grade, the teacher rearranged the whole setting, and suddenly I was getting to sit in the first seat in the first row. which is not so great after all, because you can get away with, you know, BS when that's going on. When you're right in the first seat of the first row, it's not easy. But anyway, getting back to these families, the Brazilians are raising what they're called their chosen families, which I like. And that's how we were. Me and my ex, we had our two adoptive sons, and we each had a romantic partner. They, our boys just refer to these partners by their first names. When we first got our boys, because we went through the county foster to adoption system, we were just their foster parents, and they just referred to us by the first names. And then as we adopted them and had that discussion about becoming a forever family, having a shared last name, which was hyphenated, they decided how to call us, which we brought it up at dinner one night. What do you guys want to call us? When once you're adopted and we're your dads, yes, you're going to have two dads, but you just can't call us each dad necessarily. I suppose you could, but we didn't want to go daddy this or daddy that. We actually had the same first name, basically. My ex was Antonio, and I was Anthony or Tony. And so we had these kids together, and the older one turned to my ex and said to Antonio, I want to call you Dad. And the younger one tugged on my sleeve as we were eating dinner and said, he was three at the time, which was a sweet story. He says, and I want to call you Papa, because that's what Pinocchio called Geppetto. And I thought that was great because he thought of it himself. It had meaning for him. He found a context for himself at three on what to call me as a parent, as a father, when he had another father in the household. And then, of course, there were four dads, and they never called the other guys dads, but our romantic partners, who were sexual partners, but we never had a group encounter with the four adults. But we ultimately kind of split into two couples, and this was after my stroke and everything I'd gone through. I was in the hospital for more than a year after my stroke, and it was a complicated year. I decided I just wanted to come home and not necessarily have any partner at all. So I eventually broke up with my additional partner. I don't know what you call them, but in Brazil, let's see, they have a reality show for couples who are looking for a third, and it's called Third Half. So there are couples looking for a polyamorous partner. Interesting theme for a show. Any of you guys listening have thoughts on that? 503-231-8187. Please call in and let me know your thoughts. I could use a co-host or two or an interviewee if you want to just share something and get some feedback on it. I'd love to talk to you. You're listening to Radical Romance, the show for those in ethical non-monogamous relationships. Give me a call and let me know your thoughts. So let me look on my notes on Brazil. Yes, and they have a larger percentage of the population than ever identifying as both bisexual as well and pansexual. And someone said to me over the last couple of weeks, well, what about the asexuals? Where do you fit in? Where do they fit in your show? I know I've got one asexual person out there listening. He hasn't dated or I think even had sex since the 90s when his health status changed. And you know who you are out there. You call in regularly, Jeff. Oh, I said your name. Anyway, give a call and let me know your thoughts if you're listening today, Jeff. 503-231-8187. I look forward to comments to those of you who are listening. Again, we're talking about Brazil embracing non-monogamy. It'll be interesting to see. Right now, the country does not even acknowledge a notarized relationship, such as they notarize domestic partners, as well as common law marriages in Brazil. Here in the States, I think a common law marriage is just any two people been living together at least 7 years and identify as romantic partners, and they basically have a common law marriage that can hold up in court. And I think the rule is 7 years or more on that one. So I managed to stay married for 10 years, but that was it for me. So I just wanted to come home to a different life after I'd been through so much medically and was in and out of a nursing facility as well as a hospital for more than a year. And I'm happy to say that after more than 10 years, I finally resumed my full-on sex life that I had before the stroke, and it's been great. So for those of you listening who may have had a stroke, there's plenty for you out there. Despite all sorts of health challenges, you can still get relationships. You can still adopt children. There's a lot still available to you no matter what your situation is. Oh, and I have a caller on the line named Peach. Peach, go ahead.
Hi there. I figured it was a good time to call because you're talking about a lot of stuff that I can relate to.
Sure, let's hear it, Peach.
So I have a partner. I'm non-binary. My partner identifies as just a cis woman. And it's interesting because, well, first of all, to be considered, you know, a hetero cis woman with somebody who's non-binary, it's almost like, well, technically, maybe she is queer. We've kind of had that conversation before.
That's the word I was going to use. You took it.
Yeah. with me being non-binary, you know, it has definitely opened the door to the possibilities of what a relationship could look like for us, and especially because she is very disabled these last couple years. She goes through these flares, I guess you could call it. And so we've talked about what that might look like in terms of, you know, maybe non-monogamy, because I am much more able than she is now, and she's not able to attend events that I'd like to go to and things like that. So there's this part of my life that's a bit unsatisfied. And so we've talked about what that might look like. And, you know, we've explored the idea of poly relationships. I've been where it would just be me engaging with another person. And I've engaged on apps. And the bottom line is that I don't really have time anymore with work and with my education. I'm in a graduate program.
I hear you.
Currently. I'm sorry?
I said, I hear you. Yeah, I got licensed as a clinician when I was married to my ex, and yeah, it's a lot to juggle. And we were raising kids at that time, too. We adopted, and I was entering my private practice, and we were adopting children when we got married legally, all of those sorts of things. Oh, let me ask you a question, Peach. Your partner, are you her first non-cisgender partner?
I'm her first partner, period.
Oh, interesting. She never had a romantic... Do you classify your relationship as sexual or romantic or both?
So that's a great question. So that's one reason why I decided to call in, because then you started talking about asexuality. So when we were first dating, we were definitely engaging in sexual activity. And we talked about this when we were first really getting to know each other, you know, before we were committed to each other, when we were just getting to know each other, it was like, you know, what is your expectation on sex and sexual relations, and what would that look like to you? And both of us are definitely on the asexual spectrum. She and I have not had sex for over a year and a half, but part of that is because of disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was in a similar situation up until last year. Yeah, I hear you. I was in a similar situation due to my stroke. And there were parts of my body that were just so spastic, I really couldn't move them.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, for the grace of my now partner, Stuart, and his level of patience and his willingness to be curious about my situation and ask me things like, well, can your leg move here? Can your arm move that way? And the answer to some of those questions were no, or maybe, or let me give it a shot, you know. And we got through it all, and we now have a really rigorous sexual life together. And it's a lot of fun. I hope you guys can sort it. So where are you guys at this point in the game?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, my schedule is definitely a big part of it. But I just, you know, we're both also on medications that could be lowering our libido, but
right.
Our whole lives, we've never really been, I used to be very sexually active in my 20s. But then I looked back on it and I realized that all of those sexual encounters came after drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first time that I had ever been with anybody sober was in relationships that I was in at the time. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't really interest me. It was always more for the other person. I enjoyed it, but it was never something that I really felt like engaging in.
Mm-hmm.
So now I would say that we're both just kind of going day to day, and we don't really have any plans to engage sexually until we're both in the right place. And a lot of that is, being comfortable in our own bodies. We both have some things going on where it's just, being comfortable in your own body. And
now, Peace, let me have you rewind a little. Did you say that when you first got together, you did have some sexual activity between the two of you?
We did.
You did?
Yeah, we did. There's always been this connection of, you know, I feel like I've known you in another life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had that instant connection. And so it was very easy to fall into that because everything was new and we wanted to try many things together, new experiences. And it was very nice. But it was, even at the time when we were both much more capable and able to do just general activity, it was still hard for us. We have a condition where we get winded really easily, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons why we connected in the first place.
Were the two of you early on, were you orgasmic together? Were you having orgasms, both of you?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's a good sign. The greatest predictor of future behavior is past. So that's a great sign that you guys can bring it back. It's also a wonderful sign in today's show that you called in and Matthew, the other caller, and myself, all people in relationships who have disabilities. Matthew had one partner. You have a partner. I myself have been disabled and still am. And So, I love it that there are sexually active disabled people out there all over the place. And the problem is in social settings, when people look around, if someone is obviously disabled, like I can't move one arm and one leg from the stroke, the left side is all gone, and I have no use of my left hand or foot, people look at you, they see you're disabled, but I think they're afraid or intimidated. They don't know what to do with you when you're disabled. And it's not the easiest thing in the world to find a partner when you're disabled. So mm-hmm. I love the fact that both you and Matthew have disabled partners, and yet you guys are trying to make the sex work and the love and the passion.
Well, so on that note, it's not something that, like, we feel completely fulfilled without it. you know, it's,
well, that's great.
It's not something that we have to have in our relationship. And that's why we really connect with that asexual spectrum. And we're both, I think I'm a little bit more on the sexual side of asexual, but only in comparison. Like, we're very much, oh, we don't need.
Tell me a little bit more about that. How can you be asexual, but you're more on the sexual side of asexuality? Say more about that.
So I consider myself asexual in the sense that I do not need it to be fulfilled. I do not feel the urge ever, really. But I do enjoy pleasuring myself on occasion. Like, that's an example.
Sure.
Where, you know, I don't necessarily feel the urge, but I feel there's some sort of stress building up inside of me, and I know that in the past, sexual activity has decreased those feelings of stress. So it's more of like a tool to regulate my body.
So you're human. You get stressed and you masturbate to relieve the stress. I mean, I think pretty much that's the human condition, that when most people are stressed, they will masturbate. It's one outlet of stress. I used to tell people in my private practice, just go to the gym already, you know, do some cardio. But yeah, cardio doesn't always cut it. But I'm glad you're at least sexual with yourself and that you have been sexual with your partner in the past. It's a great sign that you'll be sexual together again.
Yeah, but again, you know, we don't need it.
Right, that's fine. Do you guys live together or you don't live together? I don't think you've said.
We do live together, and I'm her caretaker also, so I connected with what Matthew was saying too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a roommate who's kind of a caretaker for me. I mean, he just does a lot more chores around the house than I do. He does most of them for sure. Good friend. And
yeah,
we did fool around in the very beginning a few times, but now we're strictly platonic roommates. Traditional, I guess, except he does help me out a lot more than I help him. But that's in exchange for rent and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody works out their own situation with the people in their lives. And I do feel like I have a lot of love in my life. I've got a boyfriend. I've got the roommate. The roommate has a cat. I have a dog. Everybody gets along. And I'm in a very loving household. Oh, and I have those two adopted sons who are now young adults. The older one just got married. He's only 24 and his wife is just 20. So, which is kind of horrifying to me as the parent. But I was in my 40s when we adopted the boys and when we got married, me and my ex. So, yeah, all those things are possible. And I want to say all these things are possible for disabled people. I hope there's some disabled folks listening to this show today. So anyway, Peach, anything before we wrap up for today? Anything else? I do want you to call back in the future and give me an update, particularly if the two of you become sexual again. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. The only way that we were even able to do it at the beginning, which I guess is an answer to your first question, you know, just really ask each other all the questions and be comfortable feeling vulnerable. And once
yes.
you get past that barrier and you feel safe in the space and with the person that you're with,
yes.
yeah, there's no end to what might happen.
Right. And to be sensible to that, I mean, I can tell you as someone who no longer drives because of my disability, I had some vision loss with my stroke, so I don't want to get behind the wheel of a car anymore. And I gave up driving, which is about the hardest thing I've ever done in life, is to give up driving. I had been driving for 40 years when I had my stroke. And I just saw on the news this morning that there is some city that is now full of those self-driving cars as taxis. I guess they're no different than Uber or Lyft, except there's no driver behind the wheel when the car pulls up. So, but yes, they're apparently all over the place in some city and about to go into even more cities. I look forward to that day when they're here in Portland in this area of the Pacific Northwest. It'll be fun for people like me. Although I have to say, even when I take Uber or Lyft, I chat away the driver, I probably distract them from what they're trying to do. Like, even on the way here, I typically take a car to the radio station, but then I usually take the bus for the Max home. Yeah, it ain't easy being the vulnerable one. I hate being in the passenger seat all the time. I'll tell you, it's scarier to me to be in the passenger seat than to be driving, because you're not in control. I hate being completely out of control. And yes, and to be vulnerable in that position where if the driver makes a wrong move, I'm the one who gets hit typically. Let's say they're making a left turn. I don't like being in that position, Peach. I just hate it. So anyway, anything else before you go? Because we need to wrap up and see if anyone else calls.
No, that's it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciated the space to just tell my story.
Oh, good. Please call in with an update at some point. I'm on here twice a month, the second and fourth Wednesday morning of every month. So I look forward to talking to you together again sometime in the future and getting an update.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Take care, Peach. Good luck. If you're curious, please give me a call. It's been an interesting show already. There have been just only three or four calls. But anyway, 503-231-8187 is the direct number to the studio here. Give me a call. Let me know what's going on in your life. If you're in a ethically non-monogamous relationship, if it's sexual, asexual, queer, straight, just give me a call. Let me know what your story is. 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, KBOO, KBOO 90.7 on your FM station. And by the way, this is a member-supported station. Don't forget, when you have the time and the money, please donate and become a member of KBOO. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have your support, most of all, and we're happy to have your support just as listeners. But if you're a listener and you want to be on the radio today, give me a call, 503-231-8187. And yes, I'm trying to drum up callers. I love talking with you guys. This show is a ton of fun for me. I hope it's as much fun for you guys to listen to and it is for me to be on here and just chat away with you. Anybody have any thoughts on the whole Brazil thing and whether or not you support more than two folks in a domestic situation and what that might look like for you if you were? I think I've said before here on the show, when there were four of us in my situation when I was married to my ex, every Sunday night we'd have a sit-down family dinner, and one of the four adults would make dinner for everyone, meaning the other three adults, as well as the kids. And the kids were really bonded with our romantic partners. It was a nice situation. I really liked it. It was like one big happy family. And that's what the Brazilians are talking about quite often, is chosen family. I think many of us here in Portland, particularly if we're not legally married to someone, we look at many of our friends as sort of chosen family. And that's how I see my roommate, our pets, the boyfriend. They seem to be all chosen family. I feel very blessed that I have all this love in my life. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you're listening. Are you someone who has a lot of love in your life? If you do, please call and tell me the story, 503-231-8187. We're discussing polyamory and domestic relationships at home. I'd love to hear your thoughts. That show that I mentioned here, Poly Family, I'm curious how they're handling it, that the adults do not know who is the father of any of the kids. They haven't done any genetic testing, but that's a curious situation. I'd be more curious to learn if any of the kids know who their blood or biological fathers are. It's a tricky situation. It's unique, and I know when we were raising our kids with our partners, it was a very loving situation where the boys had a lot of love in their lives and still do. Still have some contact with our then partners. Yeah, they're like family members. Chosen family. That's what it's like. If you want to tell me about your chosen family, please call in 503-231-8187 and let me know whether it is asexual or sexual, whether it's a friendship, whether it's more than friendship. I'd love to hear. I'm looking back on my notes. I'm thinking back to the time when I was in grad school and they were giving a lecture on female sexuality and the psychological or let's put it this way, evolutionary psychology. They talked about men having that internal drive to populate the earth. So men were going from village to village to populate the earth and give us a population that was thriving, and as well as not inbred. So they had to find women outside of their tribe to impregnate. And so men were always leaving the female to find other women to breed and populate the earth with. And the idea, psychologically speaking, at least the theorists who print books for grad students, were that the women turned towards each other for support and affection. And that's the theory on why women across cultures tend to be more fluid in their sexuality than men. You meet a whole lot more women with bisexual experiences in their history than you do males. So if you're a woman or a man who is single and have a bisexual or poly past, I'd love to hear about it. Please give me a call and let me know. I really appreciate the call from Peach. We don't get a lot of women callers on this show, but I'd love to hear more. If you're a female, let me know your thoughts. If you're a gay man, let me hear your thoughts. If you identify as pansexual or asexual, let me know your thoughts too. 503-231-8187, KBOO-FM 90.7 on your dial. I'm curious. Carmina, my assistant in the other room, you have any thoughts on what we're talking about today? No, she has no thoughts. She's just shaking her head no. ~10% of Brazilians report having at least a bisexual encounter. It's much more common in that culture. And in Belgium, 16% of the population admit to bisexual or queer experiences, sexually speaking. So it's interesting that globally, well, we tend to be a lot more conservative than people think in general. Although I do find, again, just because I'm talking to Uber and Lyft drivers all the time when I'm coming here and going other places and I tell them about this show, and I can't believe how many of them turn around and say, my wife and I have an open marriage, or my wife and I embrace bisexuality and polyamory. And I'm always surprised. It happens almost every time I'm in the car with one of these drivers. And it doesn't even matter what their gender is. I find there are some folks who I don't even know what their gender is because they have a really kind of benign name, like Francis or Glenn or I don't know. And it turns out they're someone who identifies as what is the term Peach used? Do you remember, Carmina, what the term was? Oh, non-binary. There are so many non-binary people here in Portland, more than anywhere else I've lived. Although every big city seems to have a good percentage these days of my non-binary, as well as people who would fess up to having had same-sex experiences in their past. And maybe they now identify as being under that queer umbrella. We've talked about that a lot today. So last chance for a call if you're listening, because there's only a few minutes left and then I'm off for another 2 weeks. 503-231-8187, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. I'm Dr. Tony. Give me a call. Let me know what you're thinking. I'm reading the notes again. Those pool parties in Brazil have about 3,000 folks a month show up. These are right outside of Rio de Janeiro. That sounds like a ton of fun. I admit I went to a lot more pool parties in L.A. than I do up here in Portland. It's just never hot enough for anybody to have a pool party here. And even going to the beach, the water here is frigid. I mean, the ocean water is cold no matter where you are, but I will say, having grown up on the East Coast, the water is a lot warmer on the East Coast than it is up here. Yeah, the Pacific Northwest is not the place to go to the beach necessarily. And I don't know if any of you get a suntan from the beaches here, but I never have. So I'm curious about this Brazilian thing, started mostly by women who were fed up with their cheating husbands. I don't think that's the reason to create an entire social sexual movement. But it's a fascinating topic. G, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, G.
Hi, I just started tuning in, and this is a really rich and wonderful topic. There's so much to say, and I know we only have a few minutes, but I appreciate you bringing up this topic of chosen family and exploring just across the spectrum of love and what that means to different people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll speak in my experience.
Sure.
I have been polyamorous in the past, and I currently have chosen to identify as monogamous. I'm married. I have a spouse. I identify as transgender. My partner is also non-binary. And it's interesting because they identify, I would say, more on the poly spectrum, and so we've had conversations about what it would be like if they were to have a partner, and when would we be ready to do that? And I will also just say too that in my life, I really enjoy the chosen family that I have made, and I've learned
that.
For me, it can look so many different ways. There's sometimes in queer, you know, relationships, there is an attraction to someone who you've become friends with, and then it's how do you navigate how you're going to deal with that, and what does that look like? But in my queer chosen family, we are all like platonically besties, because some of them are not, some of them are straight. So we have a wide net, I suppose.
So some of them identify as heterosexual. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you and your partner, your primary partner, identify as queer? Or
it's interesting. I identify as queer. My partner identifies as a lesbian. And I used to identify as a lesbian, but I've sort of, as I've transitioned, I feel that my sexuality is maybe sometimes more fluid and queer fits the bill, but I still, yeah, so that's...
Did you hear that part I was talking about with the evolutionary psychology, that women are more fluid because the men were not around, at least in cave people days? The cavemen roamed the earth looking for women to populate the earth, and so women often turned to each other for support, affection. So it sounds like a lot of your relationships have affection, although not necessarily sexuality.
Totally. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share my experience, and I know there is so many more stories out there.
Yes.
Of varying experiences. I have friends who started off as friends, and then there's a polycule of like four or five people, and they're all dating each other's partners, and it's really like one big beautiful family, and they moved in together, and that's really awesome. So there's so many different ways that we can make family, ways that we can shift. And I really appreciated you sharing your experiences about your family and how to raise children, and it's just really great to hear that there are alternative ways. And
well, thank you for the call, G, and please call in again and give me an update on your life. I'd love to hear about your relationship more.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Good luck to you both, and take care, and I hope to speak to you in the future. We need to wrap up for today. Okay, Portland Pollies. Here we go with our theme song. You Were Always on My Mind.
Maybe I didn't read.
I'll talk to you all again the second Wednesday in March. I'm here on the second and fourth Wednesday morning of every month. Happy playing, everybody. Talk to you next month.
You feel second best.
You did.
Girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. And maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times. I guess I never told.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations of programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934.